Harih Om Sahanau Vavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Bhagavat Paramatma Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarana 4 Jivas have an individual identity. Page 66. By thinking himself to be Prakriti, by absorption in Prakriti, Parabhijnanena, he thinks himself to be the doer of activities done by the gunas of Prakriti. Since it is impossible to think oneself to be something else without first having an identity of I, this is another type of sensing I for the jiva. It is a covering of ahankara with the sense of I, which arises from absorption in Prakriti. The sense of I in itself is not a cause of samsara, since it is fixed in the pure sarupa, the jiva. The two types of sensing I are shown in the following. Right, so it's very important, because some will say, oh, it's the sense of I that is causing the illusion. It's not. It's the I being identified with material energy. Right, because the jiva, they have their natural sarup. That's been where everything. How you say? That position, that I, that then you're liberated. But it's because that actually is yourself. But when you identify with the external energy, that's an illusion, because we're not that. Right? When the senses of material ahankara cease to function in deep sleep, the fixed atma alone remains, without the covering of the subtle body, but with memory of the experience of deep sleep. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.36. Because the false identity of ahankara remains dormant in sleep, and because memory of the self is not destroyed, we have memory, tad anusmitir naha, such as I slept happily. In that memory, one does not even seek out false identity. When in a state of false identity, in waking state, one seeks out identity as an illusory witness. Right? You just think, I slept, but you're not thinking, I meaning this gross body, subtle body, this, just I slept. Yes. Then you see, when you're awake, then you identify with whatever it is that you have there. Yes. So you can see, even there, both states are there. So that's why it's more refreshing, because you're not, it's not identifying with the gross matter. Kapila spoke thus the verse. Anucheda 30. This is also stated in the following. Just as one may imitate persons whom one sees dancing and singing, similarly the soul, although never the doer of material activities, is thus forced to imitate the qualities of the intelligence. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.22.53. The Lord spoke thus the verse. Anucheda 31. Well, that was it. I think that's the shortest anucheda we've had. Right? Yeah, so you may imitate others doing an activity, so the same way is that we then, through the intelligence, then we imitate what's going on around us. The intelligence comes up with, oh, hey, you could do this. Oh, hey, you could do that. And so we just follow that. And the mind chooses, oh, yeah, that looks good. Oh, maybe this one. So that's what it is. See, the point is we want to be able to choose something that we appreciate. Right? So the mind is the central point. But who makes the offerings to the mind? The intelligence. Right? Okay, this is Anucheda 31. This false identity is compared to seeing a dream. Because of maya, the jiva's lack of knowledge and bliss makes its appearance without cause or purpose. The lack is illusory, just like the seer of a dream experiencing his head being cut off is illusory. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.10. Upadrashtu Amushya means of the jiva who is the seer of the dream. Yeah. So there's no real purpose or reason for the living entity being in the material consciousness. There's nothing, because there's nothing accomplished. Right? And you can't say that there's a cause for it, because the natural position is that a servant of Krishna, so that can't cause it. Right? And so therefore then there's no purpose to it. He's here, it has nothing to do with him, and so then he does these things. It's just like somebody observing a dream and thinking, oh, this is, you know, this is this, that, oh, this is good, this is bad. But in the same way as here, as all these things are seen, but they're not actually, in the context of the soul, they're not real. They exist, but they're not real. You know, just like, let's say, a pine cone for a dog. It's not real. It exists, but as far as food goes for the dog, it's not real. But for a chipmunk, it's real. For a squirrel, it's real. Right? So, yeah. Maitreya spoke thus the verse. Vritti. The next Anucheda deals with the contrary statements. The next Anucheda deals with the contrary statements of the scriptures that state all the jivas as one single entity. The jivas are addressed as one entity in order to point out Brahman, like showing Arundhati's star in the sky. But in actuality, each jiva is separate because the jiva is not all-pervading, since scriptures state that the jiva is controlled by the Lord. Anucheda 32. Since it has been proven that the sense of I belongs to the jiva sarup, right? That's its nature. Because you can say also in deep sleep, that's another thing. In deep sleep, there's no functioning of the gross or subtle body. So then who's saying I slept? Right? Yes. Because we have the gross and subtle body, that's illusory. Yes. That's an external identification with material energy. So, but in deep sleep, that's not functioning, either of those. So who slept well? Who slept happily?
The soul?
Yes, so that's the soul. That's the whole point. It's before all those things. Yes. Then when it wakes up, then it takes again up those identities with the gross and subtle body. Yes?
It's like automatic.
Yes, it's automatic. We've had plenty of training, plenty of time, so we've gotten quite good at it. You know, it says that it takes 10,000 hours to get good at something, so, you know, put in, you know, 10 billion, you know, like, yeah, we're good. We're good at it. Yes?
Maharaj, how do we understand our senses and false ego is absent while deep sleep? Because after a particular amount of sleep, say 6 hours, 7 hours, we naturally wake up. So what is that connection? Because once is deep sleep is absent from...
What's the problem? You think that they just disappear?
No.
When you're asleep at night, then you don't... The not gross and subtle body are awake, so you actually just disappear and you're worried about that?
I was thinking there is some relation, because 6 hours over...
Relation to what? Well, I mean, where are you going with this? Just think about it. The gross body, the subtle body are there, but is the soul identifying with them in deep sleep? No. So then where does the question arise? You know what I'm saying? This is mental speculation. This is where we get into, oh, but it could be this and that, and it's, oh, no, oh, that whole world's falling apart. No. It's just there. You're not working with them. You're not identifying with them. You're in deep sleep. That's why you get some rest, because you don't identify with your gross and subtle conditioned nature. That's what's making you tired.
Yes.
Does that make sense? That's why if you're asleep but you dream, then you don't get any proper rest, because you're still identifying with the subtle body. Yes?
Also, sleep is considered mainly for resting of the mind, because
yes.
Different senses can rest, like while sitting some, while being peaceful, but mind requires sleep.
You're separating mind from brain here, right? Because some people can their mind never works. I mean, their brain never works. So. Okay, so it's the mind, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, so don't jump to conclusions so quickly. You know what I'm saying? Don't misinterpret or take the direct meaning. It says it's not identifying because it's in deep sleep. That doesn't mean it's not there, because that's the impersonal thing. It's not that because I'm not. It's not. It doesn't exist. That's the Buddhist philosophy, right? You know. So we can see is that it's pretty much a prominent material philosophy. Other than Vaishnavism, basically everything else has this flaw.
Yes.
They think life comes from matter. They think unless you perceive it, it doesn't exist. But, yeah, okay. Since it has been proven that the sense of I belongs to the jiva sarup, it is also proved that this identity is different in each jiva, pratikshetra bhinna. Of course, statements like the following, which seems contrary to this fact, are seen. Oh, brahmanas. If, when asking me who I am, you believe that I am also a jiva, this question cannot occur since there is no plurality of atmas in the absolute. I would have to answer in terms of plurality of qualities and type. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.13.22. In this statement, Hamsa, taking the role of a regular jiva, takes the jivas as being only one entity, imitating a common jnani guru from a material viewpoint. Though the jivas are all separate amshas, not considering this, he speaks in terms of one jiva, suitable for jnana, for the kumaras who desire jnana. A statement of oneness follows in the next verse as well. If you ask, who are you, in terms of the five elements, which are actually one entity spread everywhere, your question still should still not be asked. My use of words, addressing you as brahmanas, following your example, is also meaningless. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.22.23. Though there is difference between individual jivas, the Lord Himself says, Shunichaiva Swapakecha Pandita Samadarshinaha. The wise man sees as one the dog and the dog eater. Bhagavad Gita 5.18. Nir dosham hi samam brahma. Brahma, Brahman, jiva is faultless and one. Bhagavad Gita 5.19. Brahman means the jiva in this verse. Right, so they're pointing out is that you're talking about the individuality that is there, and then you're talking about the nature, like the tattva of jivas.
Yes.
So the tattva of jivas is one.
Yes.
They have one quality.
Yes.
Right? They all have the same quality of that eternality, knowledge, and bliss.
Yes.
They all are small. Right? They all are dependent on the Lord. So that oneness is there by community of jivas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then when they're asking the question, asking who he is, they're expecting one based on upadis. And so he's saying that therefore that's I'm also a jiva, but this is that the point is on the absolute platform, that's not how we see. So in other words, when you're dealing with the material compared to the Atma, then you're seeing all of them as one. But when you're dealing on the spiritual platform, then you see the individuality. Right? So on the material platform, in dealing, you deal according to the body and mind. Right? On the spiritual platform, then you'd deal on their particular devotional attitude, and therefore then what form they've taken to serve that, to assist in that attitude. So it's only when you're trying to shift between the two on the spiritual platform, then this may come up, the seemingness of oneness. But it's just a matter if we just talk about dogs, no one's thinking, oh, now there's only one dog. You know? Dogs bark too much. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So that you have to know the context in which they're talking. If they're trying to bring out the spiritual platform, they'll talk about the oneness. Because in Gita it says, you see them all as one. It doesn't mean they're not individuals, but you see them of the same nature. Because here they're asking, who are you? Meaning that you're different from us. And this, no, all the jivas are the same. Why are you saying so there's a difference? Does that make sense? So it's just the context.
So Maharaj, c'est impersonnel, they play a lot with
these. They only play with these ones. The other ones they avoid. And if they have to, then they'll say, oh, but that doesn't mean this, it doesn't mean that. Even though in the next verse the same words mean this and mean that. Yes. You know, it's just, yeah. So
it means there is a lot, a great determination to do that. Very important determination to act in this way, not to accept to be servant of Krishna.
Yes, it means you have to be very attached.
Yes.
You have to be very attached. So that's the thing with the mundane consciousness. It's based on envy and attachment. Envy of the Lord and attachment to being the enjoyer. Mm-hmm. You know, the enjoyer, the controller. One's attached to that. So that's why then so much argument comes up and, you know, so much, how you say, you know, being the victim, being offended and, you know, all these different things because they identify as the controller and enjoyer when you attack that. But if you're a servant of Krishna, when you attack, I'm the controller and enjoyer, why would you say anything? You know, it's like if I go over there and start, you know, bothering that tarp over there or something like that. You know, it's like, what are you doing? That's stupid. But you don't become offended. So that's the thing, is there is that identity, and that's the problem. That's what we have to be careful of. Right? It means you work with something, but you don't identify with it. Like you see, someone who's an enthusiast who is not necessarily very good at it or is new at it, they very much identify with the things. You know, I got all the things. I bought the shoes. I got the shirt. I do have the hair. So I am this. Well, people that... they're just natural in that. That's what they do. They don't have to identify with all that. You know, so obviously. They just work with it. So that's the thing, is the less you identify with it, the better you can work with it. But it's being projected. No, the more you identify with it, the better you'll work with it. It's not. It's the opposite. Because, the only advantage is because you identify, then you put in the effort. Otherwise, due to ignorance, we're lazy. Right? Like that. So, but if you're identifying as servant of Krishna, and you're serving Krishna, and all this is for Krishna, for his service, then we're going to be focused in applying that to Krishna's service. Then everything's going to be nice. Does that make sense? We're going to focus. So, there's an idea that only through attachment you focus. You know, it's just like, someone's doing an activity, they're very attached to it. There might be another person who's not attached to it, and they can very easily see what's right or wrong.
Yes.
Right? Because they're not attached.
Yes.
Right? That's the whole... thing. You ever notice that you're doing one thing, you can't see what's wrong, someone else can see. But if you change places, you can immediately see what's wrong and they can't. Because of that attachment. That sense of I'm the doer. So that's the whole thing that's not understood is the Vedic culture, the results on all platforms are superior. On karma, jnana, and bhakti are all superior because they're not attached to the results. It's for pleasing Krishna. So they're just better at it. This idea is, no, you have to be a gross materialist to be good at something. That's total illusory. Because the point is they're not doing it anyway. It's the modes of nature are doing it. So it's Maya is so expert. And they just happen to have the karma to be involved in that Maya. So the point is Maya's energy is expert. Why? Because she's not attached to your result. She doesn't care whether you get... a Rolls Royce or a Renault. You know, she doesn't care. So that's the whole thing, is so she can do it very nicely. There's no mix-up. Right, so it's an illusion to think. So that's what he's being pointed out. So you think I'm this or that, or I'm a, you know, who are you, or this and that. But they're asking from this side. But he's pointing out that no, that jivas are the same. Why you're asking this? Because that's jiva. They have the position. Only when you go across into the spiritual platform, then you see the natural manifestation of that individuality of the jiva. Because otherwise, you're just talking about the generic. Brahman, when you're talking about liberation, you're talking about the generic position of the jiva. Right? Does that make sense? You're talking about that generic position. So which is correct. But the point is they're still individuals. You know, just like you say, wow, it's a big crowd today. You know, but it doesn't mean that there's not individuals in the crowd. But together they're a crowd. Having attained an excellent taste for the Lord, my intelligence did not waver from the Lord. By my intelligence, I directly experienced that my gross and subtle bodies created by the Lord's material energy were fixed only in Brahman, in me. So slow, right? It's that plowing machine. You know, it goes real. Actually, with that machine, they could just connect a bar across it so you could hold. And then even, you know, a person who has trouble walking could run the machine, right? Because they move with the space and the thing.
Body is like a machine.
It's a machine, yes.
Like the driver, and we are the body.
Yes, that's all. And the fun part is, we're just going along for the ride.
Yes.
You know, it'd be just like this. Let us say we're sitting in the car. Right? Someone's driving, we're sitting in the front seat there.
Yes.
You know, and then we say, oh, hey, can we go this way? And then they drive that way. Or, but if it's you don't have the qualification for that, they don't drive that way. But because you say, oh, whenever I say go this way, it goes that way, then I think I'm driving the car. So we're just seated and watching. You know, that's it. We're an observer. We're not actually doing. We simply desire to do this or that. And then the modes of nature carry it out. Then we identify with it. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's a common thing. Whenever there's an element of attachment, that's how you do. Like in the family. One person in the family does something, but the whole rest of the family will identify with it. Yes, we do this. But none of them have done that, only the one person has done. But they identify because of relationship. So because of that attachment with the body, we identify, and that extends whatever's connected with the body, therefore the family, the community, the nation, like that. Yeah. So it's all fixed in Brahman and in me, because we're Brahman. Like that. But it doesn't mean, he says, having attained excellent taste for the Lord, he sees, why is that happening? Because of his connection with the Lord. Then you're understanding this. Like that. Does that make sense? But the point is, being absorbed in the Lord is the working principle, so you don't have to put any much emphasis on this understanding of Brahman. The point is that you understand the Supreme Brahman, then it all works. I see the conglomeration of cause and effect of the universe, sat-asat, produced by jiva maya, swa maya ya. Concepts of I am the body and the world with Indra and the moon is the Lord. Okay, we see all these. In Brahman, okay. Produced by Jiva Maya. In Brahman, in me, by my intelligence. Because the cause is one. One identifies self with Brahman. I am he or you are he. Though all jivas are one, the jivas think in terms of various bodies. As long as the jiva, it means they're one. They're one energy. But they still are thinking, oh, I am this body, oh, I am that body. No, they're all jivas. As long as the jiva acts through his senses and creates various destinations, he will attain a variety of bodies. As long as such bodies exist, he will remain dependent on karma. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.10.32. By different holes in the bamboo, different notes are defined. Though air spread everywhere as one entity, the great soul, the Lord, sees difference in this way. Vishnu Purana 2.14.32. So the Lord sees that everything is one, right? But then the difference is going to be by how you identify with the material nature or how you, your particular attraction to the Lord, your rati for the Lord. You exist as one, but the point is there is that you are a particular tattva. Right? Means an aspect, an energy of the Lord. See, from Krishna's viewpoint, the absolute truth is one. So him and his energies are non-different. But for the purpose of action or function, then you see there's two. The Lord and his energies. But otherwise, they're non-different. You know, the pillar and its strength are one thing. The fire and heat and light are one thing. But when it comes to function, then you see the light and heat are separate from the fire. You understand? So it's in functioning. So that's why an Abhideya becomes the central point. Because you are who you are, the Lord is who he is, but it's when you're functioning in a relationship, that's where you see then the uniqueness. Does that make sense? Otherwise, he's the Lord, you're an energy. But when you're interacting, that's where then him as a person and you as a person then have their importance. You understand? So that's why of all these, that's the highest position, because that's actually what it is. Right? Krishna is who he is and expands to interact because of his desire. Yes. Then there's the position of it. Just like, let us say, just as another example, you know, taking here. Let us say you have some people, and they're, let's say, watching some sports, right? But they themselves are, you know, are involved in the sport, and they're watching some other people, right? So they like the sport, and they enjoy watching someone else. They know the sport, they know how to play, they know what you do naturally, and all this. Then you have the guy sitting next to you, you know, nice guy. And he can tell you, oh yeah, that's just like the play they did, you know, back in, you know, 1973 by this guy, and he did that, you know, in the third quarter or the fourth half or the fifth, you know, this and that and on this and standing on his head and picking his nose with, you know, with his toes and all that, and that was, it was amazing, you know, but who cares? You know, it's like, it's nice facts, but the guy can't play. So, that becomes the point, is that you have to understand that rasa is the main thing. Tattva is an explanation of rasa. Tattva is the fact. But the point is what are those facts? What do they do? What's their purpose? Because if you say something exists, it has its existence. So that's the facts. But then it has its uniqueness. So what? Therefore, what does it do? What is it? What is it? You know, what is the results of that in that action? That has to be seen. That's complete. Otherwise, just it exists. That's not enough. So they're pointing out here is about the soul existing, and so therefore, if they're not acting in relationship of service to Krishna, then that existence is based on an illusion. right? Because it's material, so therefore they're just on the spiritual platform. They're Brahman. Yes. But when you're talking about devotees, then you're talking about service to Krishna. So now you're talking on the positive side. Because that's the neutral position. Brahman is the neutral position. Is that, you know, so you see, Krishna, his internal potency, external potency, and the jivas are all Brahman. But you see, he's the supreme Brahman, and then what is the function of the internal, the external, and the jiva? Yeah? No? Yeah, so the Lord sees in this way. It's all air moving, but goes through the different holes to get different notes. So it's the same. His energy moving, but it comes through this jiva, it has this quality. It comes through that jiva, it has another quality. But it's all jiva. Does that make sense? So for him, that's what's interesting, because he's a person, so he's interested in the personal. If he was impersonal, why would he be interested in the personal? If the highest is the impersonal, then why would Brahman ever act in a personal way? They say, oh, pastime, Leela, you know, for his happiness. But why would you do something lower? You know? If that's the highest and you're striving for that, why wouldn't Brahman be doing that? The above verse expressing oneness, however, actually refers to Paramatma. Yeah. So he is the one who, therefore, you know, pervades everything, exists in everything. Considering all this, the Shrutis state the difference between jivas as their view. O shelter of everything, if jivas were unlimited and eternal, and also all-powerful, the scriptures will not say they are under your control. But the jivas are not so, and thus are under your control. Right? So you talk about the oneness, but it doesn't mean we're not talking about unlimited eternal. If it says unlimited, eternal, and powerful, that means you're talking about the Parabrahman. Yes, yes. They're just talking about that they're all one entity who can become bewildered or this or that. Then you're talking about jivas. Because they're all Brahman. Yes. So it's just a matter of which aspect.
Maharaj, can we say that there is oneness in Brahman, but there is no equality? Not equality.
Is equality is that they're all jivas.
Not equality.
Huh?
No, not equal.
They're equal in that they're all jivas. I mean, in Brahman, yes. Means overall, no. Because you're going to have the supreme Brahman,
yes.
And you're going to have the energetic Brahman.
Yes.
The energetic and the energy Brahman.
Yes.
Then in the energy, then you're going to have the internal, the external, and the jiva.
Yes.
So jiva is superior to the external, but he's not more powerful. You know, he himself can become overwhelmed by if he identifies.
Yes.
And if he doesn't identify, he won't be overwhelmed.
Yes. You need to know his position.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's why then we're serving a Krishna. We know that whatever goes on, that's the modes of nature.
But this is a difficulty to accept that.
Because of attachment, that's all. It's not a difficult point. So that's the nice thing about this descending process. The point you're trying to get to is the same, where you start at the beginning or at the end. Everybody can appreciate the definition. But it's just then with time you start to you remove doubts and you start to understand and then you realize. But it stays the same throughout. There's no transformation of the knowledge. You know, what you're trying to learn is the same. Well, in the ascending process, it's always changing. It's always developing. Vritti, BBT purport. Acharya Sridhar Swami gives the following explanation of this verse. Many philosophers have studied the mysteries of life from various perspectives and have formed widely differing theories. The Advaita Mayavadis, for example, propose that there is only one living being and one power of illusion, avidya, that covers him, producing the appearance of plurality. But this hypothesis leads to the absurd conclusion that when any one living being becomes liberated, everyone attains liberation. right? So then, yeah, so then you get the Maya body who's talking, will get him, put him in a room, you know, feed him on bread and water and all that, and he can do all the meditation, and everybody else will go out and enjoy. And when he becomes liberated, then we'll all become liberated. If, on the other hand, there are many avidyas to cover the one living being, each avidya will cover only some part of him. And we would have to talk about this becoming partly liberated at particular times when his or other parts remain in bondage. This is also obviously absurd. Thus, the plurality of living beings is an unavoidable conclusion. Yeah, does that make sense? So, if you're going to say, okay, there's one avidya, it's covering them all. So if one figures it out, then they're all liberated, because they're all one being, and there's one avidya. Then if you say, no, there's many avidyas, because, you know, they're trying to identify that they're individual here, but not there. And so if there's many avidyas, then that means the one supreme Brahman is covered by all these different avidyas. Then if he overcomes the one, you know, as the individual jiva, he's still not liberated. Because then there's all the other avidyas. And unless I overcome all the illusion of every living entity, I can't get liberated. Or one living entity overcomes it, all living entities are liberated. So both of them are, you know, how you say? What's the word you used?
Absurd.
Obviously absurd. Right? So therefore, then plurality of jivas is there. They're there. So there's one avidya and there's many jivas. Furthermore, there are other theoricians. Theoreticians. Namely, the proponents of Nyaya and Vaisheshika, who claim that the jiva soul is infinite in size. If souls were infinitesimal, these scholars argue, they would not pervade their own bodies. Whereas if they were of medium size, they would be divisible into parts and thus could not be eternal. How does that make sense? They're medium size. At least according to the axioms of Nyaya Vaisheshika metaphysics. But if the numerous eternal jivas souls are each infinitely large, how could they be covered by any power of bondage, whether belonging to avidya or to the Supreme Lord himself? According to this theory, there can be no illusion for the soul, no limitations from which to be liberated. The infinite souls must eternally remain as they are without change. This would mean that the souls would all be equal to God, since he would have no scope for controlling all these all-pervading, unchanging rivals. Wow. It's quite undeveloped, huh? So now you can see why it goes up. So Shankara can give shelter to all others.
Mimamsakas are, in one sense, also quite well developed.
Yes. No, because they're all in the Mimamsa, Uttara and Purva.
Because then that includes not only one jiva, but all jivas, and their differential, their difference is also well explained. All others, it's only one jiva.
Yeah, what does this mean about the medium size? If they're small, they wouldn't fill their own body. If they're medium, then they would be divided.
That means, I think, medium size means if they occupy the size of the body, I think.
Oh, then it would be divided.
It could be divided.
But if they're unlimited, then there's one soul pervading all bodies. So yes. Then talking to anyone else, you're talking to yourself.
It's like soul is unlimited and then the body is just a covering. If you just remove it, then...
But the point is if the soul is unlimited, it doesn't even fit in the body. So then whether you cover or uncover, this body is still the same if it's unchanging.
I have only one analogy, I think, for everything. The pot, if you break the pot, it's the sky.
Okay, so everybody uses that one. Okay. The Vedic Shruti mantras, and then the problem is that everybody would be equal to God because they're all unlimited in that, so how God would be controlling, so therefore that's why they don't worry about God. The Vedic Shruti mantras. See, and why would people agree to this? Because it doesn't make sense. Because everybody would like to think they're God. So if you tell a room full of people that they're all God and they're all the one supreme controller, they'll all agree.
Yes.
You know? So, yeah.
Also, Maharaj, this Nyaya and Vaisheshika are the most alluring to the modern scientists and philosophers.
Mm.
Because they don't talk beyond atoms.
Atoms and logic.
Logic.
Yeah.
Hmm. As soon as you come to Sankhya, then you have to accept the Parinama, Shakti Parinama, and
yeah, all metaphysical and all those things, which they don't want to get into. The mind. Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting. Furthermore, the Vedic Shruti mantras, which affirm unequivocally the mastery of the Lord over the individual souls, cannot be validly contradicted. A true philosopher must accept the statements of Shruti as reliable authority on all matters they touch. Certainly, in numerous places, the Vedic literatures contrast the Supreme Lord's perpetual unchanging oneness with the ever-changing embodiments of living beings caught up in the cycle of birth and death. Srila Sridhar Swami prays, quote, "In my heart I take shelter of him who is glorified as the inner controller of all the worlds, and whom the Vedas ascertain in truth through logical reasoning. He is Nrsimha, the omniscient and omnipotent Lord of the Goddess of Fortune." End quote. After the word if, yadi, apari mita, unlimited in number, and dhruva, fixed or clear, and supports the Shruti's view. The word sarvagata, all-pervading, is contrary, and supports the opponent's view. Eko deva sarvabhuteshu guraha. The one Lord resides within all beings, jivas. This statement supports the view of the supreme position of Paramatma and the unlimited numbers of jivas. Yeah, because if it's one Lord resides in all beings, that means there are unlimited beings, and the Lord is the one that's unlimited and ever expanding and all that, not the jivas. Right? Even though they may be one, meaning on that platform of Brahman, but they're still individuals. Right? That's what's being established. Right? So that's why then Prabhupada will speak so much on sarvagata. Okay. The Shruti spoke thus the verse. Vritti, the current Adhikarana, established that each jiva possesses a separate individual identity. Next, the jiva's infinitesimal nature is substantiated. Because they're all an individual, and now we're going to find out how big that individual is. The jiva is anu, or is the limit of smallness. Though the jiva is small, it spreads throughout the body by its qualities, such as the giver, as the giver of consciousness, knower, doer, etc.
Eric said that the Shruti spoke the verse. So how the Mayavadi accept that, interpret that?
Because they use indirect. Remember before it was always about there's direct meaning and indirect. Yes. So when the direct works and it makes sense, why would you... No, yes. But because they have their own idea of the philosophy, they're not looking to understand from the scripture, they're looking to support their own opinion.
Yes.
And
yes.
So therefore then it doesn't make sense, so then they interpret it till it does make sense.
They don't accept that the Shruti are person.
No. But they have their philosophy, and then they interpret everything in the Veda according to their philosophy, right? Rather than the Veda is actually stating, you know, it's just like a Chintabheda Veda Tattva. You don't have to interpret, because that's how the Veda is. Because the Veda is coming from Krishna, so therefore that's the natural position. But they're taking the impersonal, because we can understand both the personal and impersonal. We don't have a problem with either of them. But then you see is that the impersonalists, they have a problem with the personal aspect. So then who's broader, right? So according to logic, then the fourth position in this syllogism is that therefore it is synthesis. You know, where you show that what they're saying is already included in what you're saying. So the oneness aspect, we already are saying. But they're on absolute oneness. So the problem is you say, no, we're saying different. That's because they're saying absolute oneness. We're saying one is in this context, right? And two is in this context. But they're saying, no, it all has to be one, or all has to be two. Adhikarana 5, the jiva is infinitesimal by nature. Anuchedas 33 and 34. In the current Adhikarana, the author explains how the jiva, though infinitesimal in size, can pervade the entire body. The Mayavadis object to the statement jiva is anu, or small. Rather, they juggle with the words to propose that the jiva is called anu because it is sukshmam, or difficult to perceive. Also, they say because the jiva is spread throughout the body, it can't be called as small. Right? Again, here, you can see it's like the Nyaya Vaisheshika, is that they're taking the size of the jiva to be the pervading nature. They're not taking it that consciousness. It's just like, I am this size, but through consciousness, I can see all around me and all that. And I can pervade that, and I can have an effect. Someone could be standing over there, you know, and I can have an effect on them. But they're saying, no, you have to be that big. Just thinking of the advantages when you're in the grocery store, you know, and like that, and you see someone reaching for that last container like that, you just, because you are all, you are anything in that, you're connecting to them, you just push them out of the way, and then you take it. Could be an advantage. So the whole point is they all have these same basic fundamental problems. You know, the jiva comes from material energy. You know, and then, you know, what size is it? It's all of them, it's unlimited. Some will just say it's because he's Brahman. Some will just, they have all these different things. So there's just a few basic misunderstandings, and then you have a variety of what you can do with them. You know, it's just like you say there's bread. It's one thing. But the variety of kinds of bread, then there's so many. But it's still bread. So if you understand bread, you understand what everybody's cooking. Does that make sense? So if you understand these fundamentals of the philosophy, then you understand what everybody's saying. Because it's all based on the same, just like we have, we know it's all envy or attachment. We know it all comes back to that, so we don't have to worry about it. So, yeah. In his commentary to this Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami refutes all such objections by reasoning and scriptural evidence. He argues that if the jiva were not small, it would have to change sizes to enter different sizes bodies. Just like a flower spreads fragrance around it, or a sandalwood applied in one part of the body spreads its influence on the entire body. The jiva similarly can spread its influence throughout the body, though it is localized at one place, owing to its minute size. Because the jiva possesses qualities such as giver of consciousness, knower, and the doer of actions, he can spread influence in spite of being small and localized. Right? So that's the thing, it's like, localized, Paramatma is localized. He's one, you know, he's one, but he's spread throughout everything because he's the Supreme Conscious. But it still doesn't mean he's not one, because they take, he spreads, then that individuality is just lost. No, we ourselves, we spread our consciousness through the body, and we're localized in one place. So the Lord, being a person, can spread everywhere, though it's all him. Yeah. Anucheda 33. Another reason is given for the jivas being different. They are Anu. Anu means atomic. This means that though they are located in different places, they cannot be further divided further. The Paramanu is the limit of division into parts. This particle gives consciousness to the whole body because of a special power. Just as a small amount of medicine in an ointment form placed on the head has the power to spread nourishment throughout the whole body, or just as a magnet has power to move iron. Shukshmaranam apyaham jiva. Of subtle things I am the jiva. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:16-11. This means that the jiva is the limit of smallness. It is not subtle in the sense of being difficult to know, right? Because that's their saying. Mahatam cha mahan aham sukshmanam apyaham jivaha. I am the greatest of the great and the smallest of the small. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:16-11. To interpret sukshma to mean difficult to know in this verse would go against the sense of the paired statements. The Lord speaks this verse. Mahatattva is called, Yes, he says, I'm the greatest of the great, smallest of the small, but it's not difficult to know, because then the problem is that he being the greatest of the great is difficult to know. You know, the jiva being smallest of the small, they're saying is difficult to know. Mahatattva is called Mahat because it is the cause of all elements in the world. It spreads everywhere. The word Mahat does not mean it is easy to understand in comparison to earth or other elements. When the jiva is called Sukshma, it thus means very small. Shrutis also say, Esho nur atma chetasa vedit tavyo yasmin prana panchada samvivesha. The jiva is atomic, understood by consciousness. In it, the prana of five types rests. Mundaka Upanishad 3:19. Balagra shata bhagasya satada kaliptasya cha bhago jiva sa vi geha. The jiva should be understood to be the size of a hair tip divided 10,000 times. Svetasara Upanishad 5:9. Aragra matro yavaparo pi drishtaha. The jiva is the size of the tip of a spoke. Svetasara Upanishad 5:8. Sarva sambhadani viti. In this commentary, the author first states that the jiva is anu, or small, by citing from the Upanishads and other scriptures. Then he clarifies the doubt on how the infinitesimal localized jiva's consciousness can pervade the entire body. Right? Because that's their whole problem. If he's small, how does he pervade? Right? You know, because there's an attachment to I'm all pervading. So you're going to argue over if he's small, how does he pervade the body? But if that's this difficulty is pervading the body, it doesn't have to be that big. So what's the biggest animal? That's all the bigger he has to be. But if that's his size, then that means then in the other bodies, then he becomes squashed. Right? It's just covered. So then the point is if covering's the problem, what does it matter what size he is? Right? Because that's the difficulty. They're using one thing to try to accomplish another because they want to be all pervading. That's their goal. You know. So you figure out how to make that work. Just like if you have an idea, then you work with the local environment to see how you can get your idea. Now, whether your idea is right or wrong, that is not your concern, right? Your concern is, no, I want what I want. So then the Vedas, being apurusheya, then they don't have to deal with that. They just state things as they are. Then if we accept the Veda, then we see things start to work. So therefore we accept the Veda, then those who speak based on the Veda, that becomes your Smriti. Then you have the Acharyas commenting on that and the great personalities. Then, you know, their practice. And that's what we follow. You know? So. Anu is explained. The jiva is by nature without limbs. The jiva is small. Means there's no nothing, you can't divide, no limbs means you can't divide it up. Right? Because we see in other places he has his form. Like that. Ut kranti gat yag agatinam. The jiva is atomic because scriptures describe how the jiva exists and enters bodies. Brahma Sutra 2.3.18. Sa yadas mach charirad utkramati sahaiva tai sarver utkramati. When the jiva leaves the body, he goes with his senses and sense objects. Taittiriya Upanishad 3.4. Ye vaike chasmal lokat prayanti chandramasam eva te sarve gachanti. Those who leave this world go to the moon. Kaushiki Upanishad 1-2. Tasmal lokat punar aityasmai lokaya karmane. The jiva goes from this world to the other world by karma. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.6. If the jiva were not small, it would have to change sizes to enter different sized bodies. Thus, its smallness is clear. Right? Because it means all bodies. So when you have this one cell, it means it's also then small.
Yes.
You know. So therefore, a small size, it works very nicely. Very convenient. Huh? In the case of the Lord, who is all-pervading and immovable, he can enter and leave the body since he is eternally in a position like the master of a village. Coming and going from the body is possible for the Atma because of its small size. Right? So we're small, therefore we can come and go. The Lord's the master, he can come and go. Gati indicates that the jiva goes on his own. At the time of death, utkranti, the jiva leaves gati. One should not take another meaning. Chakshusho va murdno vanebhyo va sharira deshebhyaha. The jiva leaves from the eyes, from the head or other parts of the body. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.2. This means that the jiva leaves the body just as a bird flies into the sky. It is thus compared to a caterpillar in the scriptures. Sometimes it seems that the jiva is described as all-pervading, meaning huge. That's how it's taken. Sava esha mahan aja atma yo yam vijnana maya praneshu. This great atma filled with knowledge exists in all beings. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. Satyam jnanam anantam brahma. Brahman is eternal and infinite knowledge. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.2. This indicates not the jiva, but Brahman. Since previously in the same scripture, the jiva was also mentioned in order to point out Brahman. Like showing Arundhati's star in the sky, right? So when it talks about ones that you see as the qualities of the jiva, it's talking about jiva. When it's talking beyond, it's talking about the Lord. Like that. Because all is Brahman. It's just that you have to know the difference between the kind of Brahman. Like all is kitchen, but you have to know the difference between, you know, a spoon and a pan, you know. So. Vedanta generally speaks of Paramatma. Pervasion and eternal existence are qualities of Paramatma. The word Mahat will be explained later. Sometimes the plural is used for Atma when referring to Paramatma. The plural does not refer to many jivas, but shows respect for Paramatma. Sa'atmedam surijati. Atma created the world. Atma here refers to Paramatma. Plural is also used to indicate that the Lord appears in different places. But because he expands, he can go everywhere. But it's, he's still the one person. So they take it. So it was, because he's the one person, he can expand everywhere. And so it's him who's everywhere. They'll take it, no, if he's expanded everywhere, he can't be one person because he's everywhere. But no, one expands. You know, it's through consciousness he's expanded.
How can our
Sipahais
expand the notion of consciousness? Because here we speak about the
jhana. Yeah, because that awareness. The awareness of yourself, awareness of others. You know, there's a sense of I. There's the ability to perceive, the ability to know. Okay. Yeah? Yes?
I think in the 8th chapter, Krishna in verse 22, he beautifully explains it in all in one verse. He says, I'm in everything. Mm-hmm. Everything is in me. Still, mm-hmm. I'm beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So the all three features, mm-hmm. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, mm-hmm. explained in one verse. But as you mentioned, we have to understand which is what.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have that preliminary knowledge,
yes.
we're confused. We don't know how to operate that. Mm-hmm. But it is right there, you know. And Srila Prabhupada explained it in the purpose.
Mm.
In the purpose.
Yeah. That's the wonderful thing about Prabhupada's purports, is that even if you don't understand technical points, you know, like that, you still gain something from that purport and can advance in devotional service. And then the more you have appreciation of the philosophy, you can see more and more elements that are being discussed. So it's a very, very special. So, yeah. No?
Yeah, and then because we studied this Gita analysis, then explaining one feature, Srila Prabhupada uses that verse. But explaining another feature,
he uses the same verse. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's the thing, because it's explaining all those. That's the... Because you see, as you get up, at, you know, as we're going through... All these philosophical points, because Jiva Goswami's not leaving any stone unturned here. So he's dealing with every aspect of misunderstanding of tattva that there can be, and you see that there's patterns, there's different varieties, but they all come back to the same kind of thing, and that another philosophy will be saying the same thing, slightly different angle, they'll give it different terminologies. And so it appears that there's this huge variety of philosophical points, but there's not. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's only karma and jnana. That's all. And then you can have combinations. So karma will have subdivisions, jnana will have subdivisions, and then you start, you know, combining as you like. You know, because the permutations means that you're taking... What are the ways that can be transformed? Combinations will be you're putting together, but then in the combinations, you have to remove the things that are the same. Like if I say, you know, let's say we're combining letters, so then is A and B and B and A two different things? It's one thing. But in these philosophers and that, they'll try to take it as two. Different things. No, my philosophy is different because it's, you know, we're saying B A, not A B.
Yes.
You know? Yes. So I guess what is it, those Swedish Wallace, then they solved the problem, so it was A B B A.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So then. Huh? So these things, if they're removed, then you see it comes down, it's very simple. Just somebody says it's backwards, someone forward, someone, you know, breaks it up a little bit more, puts this, then puts that, then puts it. It's all the same thing. You know, it's just like you're making a sandwich. You know, whichever way you put it in there, it's still the same sandwich. It's going to taste the same. You know, the same ingredients. So, yeah.
We've seen that, because we're not that expert in the Japanese cuisine, so there are rolls and there are sushis. And in my mind, it's all same, because it's all same ingredients, but just arranged in a different way. Whether the rice is inside the leaf, or the rice is outside and the leaf is inside. So yeah. Many times we call what is actually called rolls, we call sushi. You don't know nothing.
Yeah. So
you are cultured.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're the same, exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly the same. There'll be a different on the tongue, because the one, you get the leaf first, you get that smoothness and that salty thing like that, yeah. And then you get the other one, you get the rice first, and when you write first, then that will come out. But the point is that's all it is because you same philosophy, but you start from here, start from there. It seems like it's two different flavors, but it's still the same thing. Like you said, it's still, you know.
Still ignorance.
Still ignorance, yes. Still avidya. Moreover, the jiva is anu as explicitly described in Shruti. Esho nur atma chetasa veritavyo yasmin pranav panchada samvivesha. This small atma, anuhu, with which the five pranas rest, should be known by the mind. Mundaka Upanishad 3.19. The measurement is described. Balagra satabhagasya satada kalpitasya cha bhago jiva sa vigyaya. The size is the tip of a hair divided 10,000 times. Svetasvatara Upanishad 5.9. I think this is the one Prabhupada quotes a lot, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it seems that that others are also mentioning. Right?
Yes, Maharaj. In the Upanishad,
Svetasvatara. What was that?
Previous.
Oh, it was the previous. I was looking at this page. But. Oh, no, it's the same one. Mundaka Upanishad.
It's the same verse?
Yeah, but no, but then other ones also say. There was one other one also that said.
Mundaka Upanishad 3.19 and then.
Yeah. Aragra matro hyaparo pi drishta. The jiva is perceived as a tip of a spoke. Svetasvatara Upanishad 5.8. Samshaya. If the jiva is anu, is it not contrary to perception that the jiva pervades the body with consciousness? Right? Because they're thinking. But the point is if the jiva is his sai, but he's conscious, consciousness can spread. That's the meaning of the giver. You know? And through that spreading, he's the knower. But they're taking it that consciousness has to be that physical size. So that means, how would I know this house? Because I'm not the size of this house. Yes. So that's why then they have to say, as well, I'm unlimited. Because then to know this house, I become the size of this house. To know the world, I become the size of that. You know, even though I'm still covered within the body. But if I can become that size, what does the body matter? You know. So somehow or another you have to remove that and then you're unlimited. But the point is as it is, I can become as big as I like. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make any sense. It's not well thought out. Mm-hmm. You know. Uttara. No, it is not a contradiction. Like a drop of sandalwood applied in one place in the body, which gives pleasure to the whole body. The comparison is suitable since one cannot directly see how the sandalwood spreads in the body. Right? You just know that the whole body is. You know. The jiva's pervading nature in the body is not contrary to other statements about the localized position of the jiva, such as the following. Hridi yesha atma. The atma is in the heart. Prashna Upanishad 3.6, because there it's localized. Right? Sava esha atma hridi. The atma is in the heart. Chandogya Upanishad 8.33. Katatma atmeti yo yam vijnana maya praneshu hridayantar jyoti purushaha. Who is the Atma? Yajnavalkya said, that person is full of knowledge, the internal light in the heart within the Puranas. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.3.7. Okay. Even if the jiva is proved to be very small, there is no contradiction with these statements. Since the jiva is anu and conscious, and spreads its consciousness as a giver of consciousness, it spreads throughout the body. In this world, a glowing lamp situated in one place illuminates dark areas near it by its quality of illumination. The effulgence of the lamp is not caused by a destructible particles emanating from the lamp. Red cloth or a red gem radiate color to their limits without distributing red particles, since one sees the quality, e.g. redness. And the object as distinct entities, the redness is not the cloth. The original object does not dissipate. Yeah, because if you have red, that doesn't mean it's cloth. Like that wall behind you is not cloth, just because it's red.
Yes.
You know, like that. Is that? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Jai.